The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, at naturalnurse.com and Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we're visiting with you today from Progressive Radio Network. We love being a part of Progressive Radio Network because you can listen to the shows live or archived by visiting PRN.FM. And you can tell all your friends about that as well. If you like today's show or any other show that we bring you every Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. right here on Progressive Radio Network or on the archives 24/7. Our guest today is Dr. James Bard. Dr. Bard has more than 40 years of experience as a successful inventor and graduate engineer. He is a pioneer in the new science of ultrasonics. Dr. Bard has earned several patents and founded Dynasonics Incorporated, a design and manufacturing company of ultrasonic sensors and computers. His passion for understanding the bioengineering that makes us human, combined with his religious and spiritual beliefs, has led him to research the subject of happiness for more than 20 years. His theory is based upon the premise that happiness comes from altruistic ethics and behavioral choices that put into action loving kindness and compassion. Dr. Bard is chairman of the Chicago chapter of the American Scientific Association, an organization whose mission it is to bring harmony to science and religion. On today's show, we will feature Dr. Bard's latest book, and he has many, called Happiness Genes, Unlock the Positive Potential Hidden in Your DNA. And you can find more about Dr. Bard and his work at happinessgenes.com. So thank you for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Well, thank you very much. Happy to be here. Such a nice day where we are anyway. I don't know about you.
Not too bad either. But one thing I wanted to say, Dr. Bard, is I thought that it would be a good topic as we move into the holiday season. Because what I have found in my practice is that although this is supposed to be a very joyful time, it also is a stressful time. And it actually puts more pressure on people, I do believe. What's your feeling on that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think the reason for that is just what you say, because of the stress. But what it comes down to is what is happiness? The desire for happiness drives human beings, regardless of race, religion, or nationalistic. Participants in countless surveys usually respond to it as their degree of satisfaction or pleasure, and even the United States Constitution guarantees each individual the right to liberty and the pursuit of happiness. The notion of happiness that goes through the media is that it's all about getting things. Lies in money, power, success, or buying the latest gadget, car, or body enhancement product. And the media is very seductive. They lure us with the false promise that we will be happy when we own a sports car, iPhone, or have the latest in TV. Or, as you just indicated, get the best in Christmas gifts to give somebody. More than 2,000 years ago, the Buddha said that wanting is the source of human suffering. And that hasn't really changed. And that's basically why we suffer, and it has something to do with this holiday, is we want things, and we come over stressed to get such things. The four assumptions of Western civilization, basically, I'm sure most of your listeners are aware of this, is that more is better, new is is better, bigger is better, and faster is better. When have you bought into more of these assumptions, expecting it would bring you happiness, and what happened? Would you make the same choice today? The first key to happiness is understanding that is an inherent in human nature. Each of us can experience it anywhere on the planet, irrespective of culture, language, gender, or race.
So you are defining happiness to us, where there are some things that, although everyone might have a different explanation about what happiness is, you're talking about some of the things that are common to all humans.
Yeah, that's right. I'm talking about, first of all, the general idea of what people think happiness is, and then I hope to break that down into different classes of happiness. And the one specifically is genetic happiness. While the human race has a unique way of perceiving emotions and moods, the universal nature of happiness transcends culture, geography, religious differences, and even time. Who does not feel happy when they perform an act of compassion like helping a crippled person across a busy street? An altruistic act fills us with a natural sense of happiness. So there are many thoughts about what happiness is. It's like the word love. Everybody has their own impression and definition. Excuse me a minute.
Yeah, and I think love and happiness are pretty well connected, because I think most people would say if they have love in their life, that's part of what makes them happy.
Yeah, but there are many, many different definitions of what happiness is. And so we're trying to break it. We broke it down into two categories. One of them where the happiness or the source of happiness comes from outside yourself. And that's things like pleasures and getting things and concepts and new relationships, etc. And while these things can be wonderful for a time as pleasures, the problem is that they're based on conditions, and conditions, as we all know, change frequently, not just in our own life, but happen just because of things that change outside of ourselves. So today's pleasure can well be tomorrow's pain. I think we all experienced that after we got what we thought we wanted. After a little while, when it came to paying the bills and the details, we find that it really isn't what we really wanted. There's a second type of happiness, and the one that we're talking about is microbiologists have discovered that there's a biologic basis to human happiness.
That's very interesting, and I think that's what you focus on a lot in your book, Happiness Genes.
That's exactly right. And this type of happiness, and the important thing, is not dependent upon anything external to yourself, any circumstances, and so therefore, we call it genetic, because anything that happens to you, any time, and to all cultures in the same way has to be basically genetic. So if you feel happy when you do, for instance, when you do a good deed, we all do, I think, it happens to anyone in any culture in all time, and it happens every time you do it. That is not the case with something that derives its stimulation from outside of yourself, because it's always subject to change, and it's dependent upon your culture and the situation. So we know, I think, that we can all accept the fact that we're happy when we're practicing some altruistic type of activity, or, in fact, if we have believe in a divine being. We are spiritual people, and that is, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's opinion, the basis of our genetic code. That's the way we work. We work by our genetic code. And we may think that we're making plans and we're doing things separately, and why do we do this and why we do that. Everything is explainable when you get to where it comes from, and it comes from inside of us, from our genes, and in our case, our epigenetics. So what are the characteristics of external happiness? We just talked about that. That's things where the pleasure or the desire comes from outside of yourself. And basically, it's a materialistic thing or it's a new relationship. But they're dependent upon things that change that we have no control over. So they're not, they're very limited. Now, why do I say that happiness is genetic? Is just for the reason that I just mentioned, that every time you do an altruistic act, that you feel happy about it. It's encoded in our DNA, specific genes such as the D4 gene and the VMAT2 gene are part of the gene pool that provides a blueprint for our genetic states of happiness. Now, the question that comes up then, as I say, we all know from personal experience that we feel happy when we do an altruistic act. So the question is, why aren't we happy all the time? Why don't we always do altruistic acts? Why is the world in the conditions that it's in? Why is there so much violence? Why is there so much hatred, et cetera, and so forth? Stuff that fills the media, the newspapers, everything that you're exposed to. And the reason is because we have a genetic code that has a priority. And the priorities go from number one priority is our survival priority. And it's understandable why that would be the case. Back in the beginning, in caveman times, and even before that, we lived to survive. And so at that particular point in time, altruistic types of activity were not even considered. What's considered is me. It's a totally selfish type of an environment, and the idea
is Wait a minute, Doctor. Let me question that to you a little bit, only because I'm reading this great series of books called Clan of the Cave Bear, which I love, and the sixth edition of it came out, and it really focuses on Cro-Magnon man. So this was written, as you probably may know, by an anthropologist, and she actually tracked action by both Cro-Magnon man and their predecessors, Neanderthal man, where they did do things for the common good at times, even if it wasn't the best thing for them. So would that be considered altruistic?
There's no question that altruism has not been a situation previously in any time, but it's been very limited. In fact, they can trace back to animals. Animals, even before us, had certain altruistic acts. And we have, and even today, even in our society and in the areas where we're having such wars and conflicts and violence, even in that circumstance, altruism is still practiced occasionally. Not as the main thing, but occasionally it is. So it still comes in, and from time to time, it doesn't mean there is no altruism. I'm just saying that in the time
in
of basic survival, it was a lower priority in the genetic code. And the reason is pretty obvious. If we didn't survive, we wouldn't be here. And so that's known as, we call it the caveman gene, just because people are familiar with the common phraseology. But that's the first priority, and that's what we do first, and that's what we're doing now. The basic drive is for power, money, greed, and we can see that every day in the world, that's what's happening. But on the other hand, we see all kinds of charitable works, and we work with the charities ourselves, and there's a lot of it around the world. So it does exist, but it isn't the main priority in the genetic code.
And I think at times, even that, we have to look deeply at, because I know I saw a show last night about where they're going into India and Africa and supposedly helping them, like Bill Gates' organization, for instance, but they're giving them genetically modified seeds. And Bill Gates is very intensely invested in the growth of the genetically modified agricultural movement, but it really is a very poor fit for these indigenous farmers and creates, you know, more problems than they had in the beginning. So even that, I think, does need to be investigated deeply.
So The thing that's different in the concept that we took from the one that I assume just about anybody else who's proposed various types of solutions to increasing happiness and reducing violence is that we're incorporating the epigenetic effect. This is relatively a new science, and it's created great interest. It's a very hot subject, and most of the universities and hospitals have taken on departments to explore the applications from this particular type of mechanism.
Well,
and they're using
let's
it today.
Dr. Bart, not all of our listeners, they may not be familiar with what you might mean by epigenetic effect. So can you just define that for us
a little bit?
Sure, thank you.
Sure. Now, epigenetics, I've just tried to discuss why we react to our genetic priority.
Okay.
And why the highest priority is sort of the caveman priority and altruistic, or go down the line after you've satisfied your need for, satisfy your caveman needs, then it comes down to lower priorities. And so what we're trying to get to is a point where we can change our genetic priorities. And to do that, what we need to do is turn off our caveman genes, so that the altruistic genes are not blocked by higher priority genes. And the mechanism to do that with is something called epigenetics. Now, epigenetics lies over our genetic code, over our genes. It is not dependent upon the genes, but it can change the effect of the proteins which certain genes control. Now it starts to get pretty technical, but I won't get into
that
part.
That's interesting, though. Yeah, that's interesting, though.
Oh, yeah.
The genes,
the genes are really a blueprint of how a human's supposed to, how it's built and how it's supposed to work. However, it doesn't do the work in doing that. It does that through proteins. The proteins are the things that do the construction work. So the idea is if we can turn off the genes, or really the proteins that are attributed to certain genes, then we can change the priority. And so the approach to do that is something called epigenetics. And this epigenetics is another genetic code that's separate from our DNA. So basically we have two systems. We have our DNA, which we inherited from our parents, and that's our primary instructions for building and operating a human being. And over the top of that, we have another genetic called epigenetics. Epigenetics simply means above the other genes. And you can see how that works, for instance, in the placebo effect. Just by changing your mind, you can change your biology. You can turn a sugar cube into something that medically benefits you biologically. So that works through something called these epigenetic mechanisms. And what this is signals that come from outside your genes. In other words, from your environment. It might come from things like toxins and drugs. For instance, if you're in an asbestos environment, you might develop some sort of disease or a biological disease. But it also is affected by other things that, such as belief, for instance, such as perceptions. And just by experience, you can see, I'm sure we're familiar with, how your belief can change your priority.
That's been very well documented in the sports field, because they've actually looked at athletic performance before and after using visualization techniques. and they're somehow able to actually physically and measurably change specific performance parameters through the use of mental exercises. So it seems to change their genetic ability to perform.
Exactly. And what we're planning, what the book is about, is using these epigenetic effects to change the priority of our code so that altruistic activities can assume a higher priority. So then we go through different techniques of how to do that. There are a lot of things out there as far as what people suggest as far as programs, but to be able to make these changes, one has to first get control of their mind.
Well, we're going to stop right there just for a moment, Dr. Bard, because this is a fascinating topic. We're going to let the station identify itself and tell us all about more exciting things that go on right here at Progressive Radio Network, and we'll be right back. And we are talking here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can reach us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And we're talking to Dr. James Bard, Ph.D., author, along with Lori Nadel, Ph.D., of Happiness Genes. Unlock the positive potential hidden in your DNA. We will be right back with more right here on Natural Alternatives. Thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, a Progressive Radio Network. That's our PRN.FM. And you can come on board and listen to us every Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. or anytime on the archives. And that goes for our show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and all the excellent programming right here on Progressive Radio Network. Today we have as our guest Dr. James Bard. He is the author of Happiness Genes, Unlock the Positive Potential Hidden in Your DNA, and that is our topic for today. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Bard.
All right, thank you.
Now, that was very interesting. We finished epigenetics. Okay, so we can continue our discussion with... Is natural happiness, is that genetic?
Yes. It's genetic because, as I said before, if you do an altruistic act of any kind, you will be emotionally rewarded in a feeling of happiness. And this happens to anyone, anytime, and it can be repeated by any culture. So it's cross-cultural, and it's any time, so it is, by definition, a genetic type of response. Now, as we discussed that particular part about epigenetics, the important thing here is that we were talking about changing our genetic priorities. So we reduced the higher priority of our caveman genes and increased the lower priority of our altruistic genes, going from a selfish type of state to a selfless type of state. So how do we do this? To make a change, to make an epigenetic change, you can do it physically and with chemicals like they do in treating cancer. But in our case, we need to do it with our mind. We can control our biology with our mind. We all are familiar, I'm sure, with the mind-body type of link, and you can see it in many effects. But how can you do it consciously? Well, the quality of our life is mainly a reflection of the state of our mind. In other words, it's all in your head. As far as this is concerned, there's no objective world out there. It's all about our perceptions, or what you see is what you get. Our mind is essentially in two states, the unconscious state and a conscious state. The unconscious state is the mind, our first one that evolved, and its purpose is to lead us through life, and it works based upon our instincts, our genes, and our life experiences. So in other words, if you did something in your life that created a problem, you didn't want to do it again, you would remember that, and so you would avoid doing that again. So our unconscious mind is essentially a recorder. It records all of your experience, your genetics, and all of your life experiences, and it keeps playing it back. And most of us, I'm sure, are familiar with what they call the voice in the head, which is our mind talking to us, which it does basically continuously. And so it tells us what to do, what not to do, how it intimates what we did in the past that didn't work out, what we're afraid that's going to happen in the future. So we worry about the past and we fear the future. And that's what most suffering, emotional suffering, is derived from. And most of us have it to certain degrees. And you can see by the levels of depressions and mental diseases and so forth and our own suffering that is the instigator and the major problem with regards to having a conscious mind. Now, the conscious mind came along much later in evolution. It's an optional mind, meaning you don't have to use it. But basically, it is independent of the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind is the recorder, which had recorded life experiences. So the experiences that we had when we were, like, for instance, children, we carry throughout our life. And because that recorder can't be changed, programs in there, and you're stuck with it. What you can do, if you can experience your conscious mind, get into your conscious mind more often, what you can do is create other programs which offset the negative programs that are already in your unconscious mind.
So you're saying that you can use specific techniques, which, by the way, you do outline in detail in your book, Happiness Genes, to bring up your level of internalizing happiness.
Exactly. So you can't do anything to make any changes unless you can get control of your conscious mind, because that's the only part of your mind you can control. The other part of our mind controls us, and it does it most of the time. Most of us, most of the time, are under the control of our unconscious mind, and we're simply doing what we're being told to do. We don't have, our conscious mind's not in effect, because it's a smaller part, much smaller part, came much later in evolution. It's a much smaller part of the mind. The conscious mind is a creative mind. It's the kind of mind you get into when you're making executive decisions, for instance, or when you're in the altruistic mode. And when you're in your conscious mind, you're not in your unconscious mind. It locks out the unconscious mind, because the conscious mind only deals with the present. It only deals with what's happening now, what's in front of you, what you're touching, what you're seeing, what you're planning on at this time, what you're creating through artwork or whatever, music, whatever you might use. It's in this moment. It doesn't happen in the past or happen in the future. Therefore, there's no worrying about the past or fear of the future. The unconscious mind only works in the past and in the future things. It does not work in the present. So when you're in the present, I'm sure we all heard these phrases about living in the now or living in the present. When you're in the present, you're out of your conscious mind, unconscious mind. So the way to make the changes, we have to find techniques for getting in our conscious mind that we can do willfully. And to do that, we've come up with a bunch of different modalities and exercises that will allow us to do that.
Plus, you call it a 28-day program. And that's really significant, because there's an amount of time that you can actually physically spend on this particular program to actually change your happiness quotient on a genetic level.
Right. Yeah, it's the hope. The eye of the plan is a work on a relatively short period of time, and it does not require any significant amount of time. So I would say that's what we call, that's our first program. That's a more simpler program that was developed by Lori, Dr. Nadell, who is highly experienced psychologist, who's created many programs of this nature. And so that one is in the book, and it's, as I say, it's not a difficult thing to do. You can change your habits in 28 days. It's necessary to change your habits because, as we all know, we're creatures of habits. That's why self-help books don't work. Not only are they misdirected in many cases, but in almost all cases, they don't help you create a habit. If you don't create a habit, it's gone. What might be a good idea today, 2 weeks from now, is forgotten. So it has to become a habit. Another program that we've produced in addition to the 28-day program is something that's more extensive, and that's listed on my website under happinessgenes.com. There's a section there about the happiness program, and it goes through these different acts. And the idea of these acts is to become more conscious. And to become more conscious, you have to live in the present. That's an absolute requirement. And you have to do certain acts that are altruistic acts that you can habitualize. Another part of it is self-hypnosis. Self-hypnosis has shown itself to be very effective for doing these kinds of activities where you want to create habits. So that program is, I say, on the website. And also on the website is a questionnaire. In other words, we're talking about happiness here. And so what is it? I mean, when do you know you have happiness? You could talk about the word honey in many different ways. You could explore it, but you really don't know honey until you taste it. And you really don't know what your form of happiness is until you have it. So to help come up with some sort of a measurement that's not so subjective, we've got a questionnaire, actually, that's developed by the Oxford Happiness Questionnaire. It's been around for a long time, where you can go through these statements and put numbers attached to them and then come up with a sum at the bottom. And we were suggesting you do that before you start this program, and then you do it during certain stages of the program.
Well, I'm looking at the website. I'm looking at happinessgenes.com.
Oh, okay.
So if we were going to do that, where would we find the questionnaire? Because that's such a great thing for people to try.
It's on the website. Hold on a second. I'm not in front of my computer, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's under,
so I'll look at it under
the
happiness program, I believe. Yeah,
yeah, it's under the happiness program here.
You can actually do the questionnaire yourself. And it
right.
tells you right here, it says instructions, a number of statements about happiness, and then you can indicate if you agree or don't agree. So one is, I don't feel particularly pleased with the way I am. That would be the first question. And then once you get at the bottom of all the questions, you can sort of get a score of how happy are you in particular, and then
right.
take the appropriate steps to change that if you consciously would like to.
Yeah. I think that's important because if we don't see some sort of progress in what we're doing and see some real benefits on it, of course, we're not going to continue it. So it's interesting to talk about these things theoretically, but if something positive doesn't come out of it that can change your life, then of course it's just entertainment. So that's the purpose of the questionnaire. It's the kind of thing that almost anybody can relate to, and they can determine if they think that they're making some progress. If they are, they'll continue. If they aren't, they won't. So I don't know of any other happiness program out there that does this. I would love to run a clinic and have run a couple small ones where you measure people before, during, and after to get some information on such that you can definitively say, yes, this works. This works for most people or works to some degree for most people. There isn't anything out there of a clinic on measuring happiness that I know about.
Well, this kind in terms of happiness, of genetic anyway. Priorities, just like there's genes for being overweight and there's genes for how well you see, are there actually genes from your family that sort of give you that starting point of your happiness quotient?
Yeah. Yeah, you inherit some of this. There's a through your DNA, you have a certain level of happiness that you already inherit, and then your life circumstances will change to a great degree what you believe can change your happiness. So it all is sort of all interconnected to some degree. I think that it's important to be able to come up with some sort of definitive thing that you are doing what you had planned to do, and that way you can continue and you can refer back to it. The other plans, there are some. I guess I shouldn't have said there aren't any. There are some plans that are put out by some of the universities where they're pushing popular psychology as being a way of happiness, but their happiness has to do with satisfaction, feeling of well-being, and things like the materialistic things, and they're all affected by outside events and circumstances. I mean, it's better than nothing, but I think that as long as it's not genetic, if it's not genetic, I don't really think it's something that's permanent, it's going to work in your system lifelong.
And plus, it's interesting that you're saying you can actually even change whatever genetic gifts or lack of gifts there are that you inherited.
Yeah, you can.
You're doing some of these specific techniques.
Let's take an extreme example. We all hear about, for instance, these terrorist bombers. Now, giving up your life, whether you're a martyr or whether you're a saint or whether you're a terrorist or whatever you are, goes against your priority. Survival is the top priority for very obvious reasons, and people are willing, because of beliefs, to change that priority. To give up their life shows how powerful our beliefs are, and belief is an epigenetic effect which can change the priority of your code. So we can do all kinds of things with our mind to change the priority of our biology, but first we have to get in charge of our biology, of our mental controls, and the only way we can do that is be in a state of consciousness. And so that's the point of this program, is to develop a higher level of consciousness so that you're running your life rather than your past experience and then genetics and all the things that you've inherited.
Right, and in your book, Happiness Genes, you do have some very specific exercises, such as emotional freedom technique. And this is really nice because it tells you just what to do. If you are right-handed, perform this exercise on your right hand, and if you're left-handed, on the other side. And you make a series of karate chops against the side of your hand, halfway between the base of the pinky and the top of the wrist. And you say aloud, I accept myself even though I am upset. This is very, very specific.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's meant to be that way, to give people a real direct contact with what they're doing and what they're and they'll be able to do these. Many of these things they can do any place, any time. You don't need a lot of time. But you just have to understand how they're all interrelated and what you're trying to accomplish. And as I say, the first thing to accomplish is to work on becoming more conscious. If the world was more conscious.
How do you do that?
Beg your pardon?
What is the first step in becoming more conscious?
It's right here in Act 1.
Okay.
Act 1 on page 174. It's in that program on the website.
Right.
On the,
so the first
on the
thing
happiness
people would
program.
Do is have to step back and take a look at yourself.
Yeah. Well, you see that now, this, unfortunately, it's not here. You have to, it's not on a website. You have to go into the book to see what that practice is. But it details it, and it's step-by-step. And it's intended, it's designed, so you don't have to spend much more than 10 minutes a day doing this.
Well, that's really helpful. So you can make a commitment.
Yeah, we're all busy. We, mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to find... For many of us, it's hard to find time to take care of our own needs, our own priorities, because we're so busy doing other things and for other people and work and obligations, and it goes on and on. America is one of the most hyperactive countries in the world, and it's for that reason that we have one of the lowest levels of happiness.
Is that true?
We're way down. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
we're way
not
down.
Not necessarily linked.
They're in the book. The list of different countries, we're way down the list. And the main reason for it is the fact that we're so hyperactive, that we're so stressed in trying to get things done, that we don't take time for ourselves. And we have one of the highest rates of depression, the highest rates of suicide, mental disease, goes on and on. And you would think that would not be the case because of the fact that of our materialism, that we have a lot of things, we have very high standard of living, and but that's not the way it works. Some of the happiest countries in the world are some of the poorest countries.
So that's according to when they go around and actually do a
yeah,
study.
Yeah, these are
and
surveys.
Yes, survey.
You know, I don't really know how they do all these surveys. I think this program comes from WHO, the World Health Organization.
Okay,
and they're very and different countries run their own because they feel that's a measure of how successful that country is, its government is, and how effective their people are going to be. So different countries run these programs as far as degree of satisfaction and happiness. So there's a lot of information to come by, but they all basically agree on what the relative ranking is as far as happiness or not. A lot of them don't call it happiness because that's a hard thing to define. They call it self-satisfaction is basically the main term that's used.
Well, what are the different kinds of love that people might, you know, there's like agape love. You talk about that in your book and romantic
right.
love and different kinds. What would that mean?
Well, where all this love came about with respect to the Bible, for instance. It's the Bible was written in Greek, as I'm sure you know. And although we have many meanings of love, the Greeks have different words for different kinds of love. They break love into four different kinds of love, and they give them each a different name. Now, one is love of family, one is a brotherhood love, one is eros, which is sexual love. And then there's agape. Agape love is the love that Jesus always talked about. And agape love is not necessarily an emotional love, can be, but mainly it's wishing the best for your neighbor, wishing the highest good for your neighbor. And so that's what the Greeks call agape love. And if you look up, if you go to the Bible and you look up love and then you look up the Greek meaning, that's what you'll find. So that's why I call it agape love is, and you hear this all the time in church, you said love your neighbor, love this, but no one seems to say, what's love mean? What do you mean by that? We all got different ideas of what the word love means, but agape love is very specific. It's just wishing the highest good for your neighbor. So I put that in there because I use the word agape, so it's defined. I just say do an act of love. Well, what's, you know. The relaxation response is been around for a long time. That's was designed by Benson of Harvard, maybe 30 years ago. And it's a standard at almost all the medical treatment facility hospitals and university. And what it is the exact opposite from the flight or fight syndrome. We're familiar with that. When we see a threat of some kind or a perceived threat, we get our biology changes, we get all excited, blood pressure goes up, eyes dilate, and so forth. We're getting the either fight or flight. It's a primitive type of instinct that was designed, I'm sure, to save us from the tigers jumping out of the bush, and so we could get away. And the relaxation response is 180 degrees different from that. It's an actual biological type of response that will slow down all of the things that fight or flight speeds up. And it's very simple. It's a kind of relaxation where you start working from the bottom of your body or the top of your body and start working up your body, relaxing different parts and components of your body. But it's a biological effect, and it's very effective. It doesn't take very long. But again, it's to get us out of the worry and fear syndrome, which is the hallmark of the unconscious mind. Other acts are pretty obvious, the act of compression, compassion, altruistic acts, and self-hypnosis is very simply done. There's a script in the book that you can follow, and you can just read the script and go through that, or you could make a recording of it and listen to the recording.
Yeah, making a recording is a great idea.
Beg your pardon?
I said making a recording is a very good idea with self-hypnosis, because then you can listen to it and you don't have to have your conscious mind engaged.
Yeah, we have some. If anybody wants a CD disc on a on the script for the hypnosis, self-hypnosis, all they got to do is send me a note on the website and I'll send one to them.
Oh, that's excellent. And that's very, very interesting. I want to tell our listeners more about happinessgenes.com. So if you want to unlock the positive potential that is hidden in your DNA, you can find the book, happinessgenes.com, and also the website, happinessgenes.com. And do you have any way to get in touch on Facebook, Dr. Bard?
Yeah. Yeah, we got a page on Facebook.
So what is that?
Happiness Genes.
And the picture on the front is excellent because it's really cute. It shows a DNA with a little happy face, and that's something that you can actually imprint on your own genes and make them be a higher level of happiness genes. And that's a great message for our holiday season right now. Whether we have money or not, this is very, very simple stuff. It really doesn't cost anything but a few minutes a day. Stop your car on your way to work and turn off the cell phone, and you can complete one exercise as a great program, 28 days, with what to do each of those days, and you will feel much happier at the end of those 28 days. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And Dr. Z, and that was Dr. James Bard, author of Happiness Genes. And this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com. Send in your questions or visit us on Facebook at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And visit our archives at prn.fm by just scrolling down when you get to archives to a T, because it's dot Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy and happy. Be well.
Listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Join us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health call-in talk show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time.
We'll be talking about current health news, plus Vicki shares her entertaining 2020 health tips at 20 after and 20 to the hour.
And if you miss our live Monday shows, they're archived on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and DrSaputo.com. That's DrSaputo.com.
The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
This is Glenn Ford.
And Nellie Bailey of Black Agenda Radio.
It's the place for the